Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And here we go on a Thursday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, and it's basketball, basketball, basketball. So it's a really good thing that this guy is here. And obviously, you can tell between the two of us, Brad isn't here. Kyle Dodd, to my right, your left, ASU men's basketball radio analyst, but a guy who has forgotten more basketball than I, Jeff Munn, will ever remember. But we've introduced ourselves to one another before. I don't need to go into the whole rigmarole. ASU women's basketball on radio, former D-backs broadcaster, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But today is draft day in the NBA. We are going to talk a ton of draft news. I'm watching my phone just to see any late-breaking developments because you were just saying it. It's good to have Twitter because it seems like there's a bit of news that comes like every couple of minutes.
Yeah, and is it good to have the Colangelos back in, the sport too, because it seems like all of the things that are being leaked right now are coming out of the Philly camp and the Noel news and Okafor. And, you know, draft day is crazy because it really does. It changes every couple minutes and the rumors and the trades and all that. It's going to be a crazy couple hours here.
So we are going to talk primarily basketball today, and we have a couple of guests, Paul Coro, AZ Central Suns beat writer, and Clark Kellogg, CBS college basketball analyst. And we're really excited to get Clark on to share his thoughts about some of the players the Suns may take and about the draft in general tonight. And we discussed this the last time we did the show together, and I think the starting point, we want to use the first segment to talk primarily about the Suns, but the one thing that hasn't changed from the last time we did the show together to now is Simmons 1, Ingram 2, who knows about that after 3?
Yeah, I think, you know, those are the givens, and I think there was more made of the Simmons and Ingram, you know, picks than there really needed to be. I think Simmons was going 1 all along, and Ingram was going 2 to the Lakers all along, and now you're sitting there at 3, and does Boston trade that pick? We've heard that a lot. Do they take Chris Dunn? Do they take Bender? You know, there's a million different ways this thing can go. And if you're the Suns, you're sitting right there behind all the action and at 4. And I think you got yourself in a position where you're going to probably wait and see what goes down in front of you and see where you go from there.
You make a great point. And just to get people up to speed on the latest news we have, Chad Ford of ESPN is reporting that the 76ers are very aggressively trying to get the 3rd pick from Boston in a deal that would involve Nerlens Noel. The interesting thing to me about that is they already have 3 picks in the first round. Yeah. There is no discussion in the story that we have of them trading one of those picks to package with Noel to try to get Boston's 3rd pick. So does that mean that they're trying to get 4 picks in the first round?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see Noel warranting a top 7-8 pick. Just to be honest, I don't think he's that kind of talent. I think if Noel's going anywhere, it'd be for a pick outside the top 10, in my opinion. So that may be something that the Colangelos are throwing out there, or, you know, or people are trying to stir up some things. But, you know, it's interesting because Boston could go a different, you know, number of different ways. If you're taking probably the best player available, you got to go Chris Dunn, in my opinion. But, you know, you have some options there, and I know their phone's ringing. And we know Danny Ainge, he likes to do things pretty late in the game. And, you know, he made the trade for KG and Paul Pierce, and, you know, right before the draft. And so it'll be interesting. You know, Boston's in a pretty good spot. They can do a number of things there.
Let's zero in for a moment on the Suns. Not much about their situation has changed. The names have moved a little bit in the mock drafts, more so with the 4th pick than 13 or 28, per se. 13, most drafts, if they keep 13, they think it's Henry Ellenson out of Marquette. But this 4th pick, I think, and you saw a lot of Marquise Chris.
Yeah, I saw him quite a few times this year. I saw him twice when ASU played him, and then multiple times in the Pac-12 tournament. And I think that's where this trend upward started for me, is in the Pac-12 tournament. He looked like a top 5 pick. He was athletic. He was strong. He was just beasting guys on the block. And I think, you know, I've heard over the last couple of days, well, yeah, Chris is the safe pick, and if they want to get a guy with higher ceiling, it's Bender. And I disagree. I think Chris isn't the safe pick necessarily. I think he's more polished than Bender right now, but his upside is ridiculous. I think he's a 6'10 guy with a 38-inch vertical and, you know, dunks everything around the rim. Hasn't played a lot of basketball. Just started playing basketball 5 years ago. So both of those guys, Bender or Chris, I mean, it's probably, you know, something where you're going to have to – you know, the finished product's going to be the exciting part. But I think Chris is a little bit more ready to play right now. He's got NBA athleticism. He can be an athlete in the NBA next year. Bender, I think, is a guy that really struggling to find minutes on his team in Israel right now. So that's going to be a more of a long-term deal if the Suns decided to go in that direction.
That's Kyle Dodd, ASU radio basketball analyst and very involved in basketball throughout the Valley here. I'm Jeff Munn, ASU women's basketball play-by-play, and just I wander the countryside picking up gigs wherever I can. To me, Kyle, and we've talked about this in different ways the times we've been together, this draft tonight is more, it's two things. I think it's a referendum on Ryan McDonough, and I think this is the moment where the Suns are really going to show their hand in terms of what do we want to do. And it involves more so, to me, picks 13 and 28. I cannot see a scenario where they're going to trade out of four. And if they do, if the public would be okay with that. I just can't see the fan base going, wait, you made us go through all this so you could trade out of four.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anytime you get a pick in the top four, you're most likely not making that deal. If you're in the situation where the Suns are in right now, which is, you know, struggling over the last couple of years, I agree. I think they have some options with 13. They're at 28 and they're at 32. I don't think the Suns want to take four drafts, you know, draft picks in this draft. So I think they're going to try to package a couple of those later picks and try to maybe get some veteran guys in here. And if you go young and you go with a guy like Chris, then, you know, you're probably going to want to bring in, you know, some veteran guys and surround them with that. And, you know, also heard, you know, they're actively shopping, you know, they're one of the two guards. They want to get rid of Knight or Bledsoe before the start of next season. So it'll be interesting.
I did the show last week and we had Tim Kempton on, and he thinks, yeah, I think there is an argument for keeping the three picks. And I agree with you, it can't hurt to bring in a veteran presence, but wouldn't the better route be to take a surplus in the backcourt and see if you can turn that into the veteran front court player that can help a Chris? I've been in the camp all along. Keep the young players, bite the bullet, rebuild. There's an argument that, well, it's going to take a little bit of time, and they've already been 6 years without a playoff spot. My contention is, as long as that team plays hard, they're not going to sell out the building, but it's not going to be shoot a cannon through the place and not hit anybody.
Yeah, I think you're getting close. You're bordering on. I think that the Suns fans have been pretty patient. I think that this is a year where you need to make a move in the right direction. We think back to a couple years ago where they overachieved in Hornacek's first year, and there was excitement about that. They played hard every night, and it just really, the expectations went upward, and then the last 2 years they've basically fallen flat on their face. So I think the Suns are in a spot right now where you need to make a move, not necessarily secure a playoff spot next year, but you need to be in the mix. And I think, you know, you're going to have to continue, like you said, continue accumulating this young talent. And, you know, something that's also been talked about is maybe taking a Chris Dunn at four if he's there, if the Celtics go Bender or something like that, and not for yourself, for someone else, because right. You know that pick is going to be, you know, people are going to be asking them, if Dunn doesn't go, the people are going to be calling the Suns saying, hey, take Dunn for us, and we'll make a deal here. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, and that rumor's been out there for a couple of days, and that, too, is something we could see kind of fall into place. I've got to double-check. Eric Sorensen, do you know what time the draft actually starts? I think it's 4:30.
You know what? I don't believe, but I think around 4:30
around
or
5. Around 4:30. And ESPN is televising it, and it will be every year the draft has interest and intrigue to it. But boy, this year in particular, I don't know if it's just because the Suns are drafting so high or that there are so many ways this thing could go still with like 6 hours before the pick is made or the picks are made, that this draft in particular, and the funny thing is, most observers would say it's not that great a draft.
Yeah, I don't think it's a necessarily deep draft. We've seen some really deep drafts 2 years ago, probably the deepest draft we've ever had. This is not one of those drafts, but you know, a day like this is, it's funny to me because, and I'm sure you feel the same, you'll see the word sources about a million times today from people, you know, and a lot of these teams, it's game. It's, they're putting out these rumors. They're trying to stir some things up, and it's a very, very fun day for basketball fans. And I think the draft sometimes is even more exciting than some of the regular season action in the NBA.
It wasn't more exciting than the game seven of the finals.
No, that's
for certain. And you're right. You said it at the beginning. I told my 20-year-old son when Jerry and Brian, particularly when Jerry Colangelo got in into a position of authority at Philadelphia, I said, watch now. This guy's built it and stripped it down and built it back up multiple times. I said, this will be fascinating to watch. And Brian's done the same thing. This will be not just this draft, but the months that follow are really going to be interesting to see how Brian goes about his business. We got to go to a break, and Kyle mentioned sources. We're going to have a source on. Paul Coral from azcentral.com. He can't do much better for a source on Suns information leading up to the draft. So we'll get Paul on. Clark Kellogg a little bit later on. And then after that, we may try to convince Kyle that it's time for the Angels to start selling people. But not Mike Trout.
No,
not Mike
never,
Trout.
Never.
All right. It's a Brad Sesmatch show. It's draft day, and we're glad you're with us.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
It is draft day in the NBA. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. Kyle Dodd, ASU radio analyst for men's basketball, and he's got a lot more on his resume than that, but that's the first thing that always pops into my mind. I'm Jeff Munn. And basketball is a big part of my resume as well. And basketball is a big, big part of our next guest resume. Fresh back from the NSMA weekend in Salisbury, North Carolina, the reigning Arizona Sports Writer of the Year, Paul Coro of ABC Central. We were just talking before we came, literally seconds before we came back out of the break, Paul, about seeing all the great photos of Tim Healy, who got Arizona Sportscaster of the Year. You guys look like you had a good time.
Oh, yeah, those people are unbelievable there. It was very cool to share it with Tim and be around him. At one point, I was talking to Bob Davis, the longtime KU play-by-play guy, former Royals play-by-play guy, and I was like, you got to meet Tim Healy. And so at one point, I was making sure that they met each other, and then they end up sitting at a table one night and talking it up for a long time. And that was awesome. Like one of the best things I felt like happened all weekend.
That's awesome. All right, here, let's get into it. What's the latest? Are you hearing anything about any of the picks, 4, 13, or 28, that would be different than the Suns keep the picks and draft players themselves?
I think, though, up until they pick, they'll continue looking at trying to find something for one of those picks. I think they would like to be able to acquire a veteran, either a rising star. I don't know that the quality of players in that draft range are enough to get that type of guy, or maybe a role guy. But I think they like Marquise Chris a lot. I think he'll be there at number four for him, and then that gives them opportunity to look at different things at 13. You could even go with a different type of power forward there, like a Sabonis or something like that, or go for a backcourt guy, maybe a Denzel Valentine or an international swingman like Luau from France, if he's somebody that doesn't want to come over right away. But they'll continue, how it works. You got to wait to see what happens in front of you, and you got a bunch of trades on the board, scenarios that might be available, but you don't know until your pick comes up. And I definitely think something will happen with their latter picks, either dumping the picks, stashing a guy internationally, but they have four picks, and they have a plenty enough young team, so they don't need four rookies walking into camp.
We talked about the certainty of Simmons and Ingram going one and two, and really you don't really know at this point what's going to happen right in front of you. But you mentioned Marquise Chris, and I had the opportunity to watch him live four or five times this year, and really late in the season is where I really felt like he started his trend upward. And is that something that you saw in the Suns camp? I mean, are they high on how he finished the year? Really, the Pac-12 tournament, he looked like a lottery pick, like a top five pick, in my opinion.
Yeah, because what you're banking on with him is upside. He's only played 5 years of organized basketball, so you're hoping there's a lot more growth in his game. And when he shows that in his first year of high-level coaching that he can adapt and improve, then that's what you want to see in a guy. And he's a pretty impressive kid to talk to. For all the knocks on his immaturity, you know, maybe he's emotional on the court or frustrated, that sort of thing, but you talk to him in person, and he's an amiable guy that I think fans would like. And, you know, the only thing you have to question with a guy like him that just kind of fell into the game late is where if his passion is there for it, because he grew up, you know, with a football dream, and basically an injury in his height sent him to basketball. And so that's always a concern, that does a guy play basketball just because he's tall? And, you know, does he just want the lifestyle, or does he really want to be great? And so that's a lot of what they had to figure out in those in-person interviews.
Paul Coro, EZCentral.com, Suns beat writer. Kyle Dodd, Jeff Munn on the Brad Sesmatch Show. It's hard to pin down names. But if we go with the theory that the later picks in the first round are going to be used to try to acquire a veteran player, is it at all possible to identify names of players that would fit in a trade for those two picks? And I know that's being way more specific than you can possibly answer, but I'm asking the question anyway.
Well, it's hard to come up with names. I mean, you hear guys that are maybe on the market, like a Mario Hezonja that hasn't really met expectations in Orlando, or if you want to go for more of an established guy, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in Charlotte. And, you know, I name those type of guys because I think maybe a small forward or a front court guy would be the type that they would look for in those situations. They're obviously pretty set at guard, which makes it really awkward with the fourth pick, because a lot of those guys in that wheelhouse are Jamal Murray, you know, Buddy Hield, Chris Dunn, and you know, those players don't necessarily want to come to a place where you already have Eric Bledsoe, Brandon Knight, Devin Booker commanding 30 minutes each a night. So I think if they were to make a veteran move, it'd be to more to balance out their front court. But yeah, that's a really hard read at this point, because you know, you don't know what other teams are interested in acquiring picks. You know, part of the problem with their picks is, you know, a lot of people look at this draft and say 4 might not be that different from 10, or, you know, 13 might not be that different from 20, because, like Kyle mentioned, there's a clear top 2, and then after that, opinions all over the place.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's definitely an interesting draft from that perspective, because after, you know, from 3 to 20, it could go a number of different ways. But I wanted to shift gears for a minute. There's been a lot of talk about Bledsoe or Brandon Knight, one of those two guys being moved before the start of next season. Is that something that you see happening? And if so, you know, what are they trying to acquire for you know, what position, what are they targeting for one of those two guys? And do they have a preference? Would they rather move Knight or Bledsoe or just whoever they can get the best deal for?
Yeah, you know, no matter their faults or their health history, they're both really good players. So they're not just going to just trade one to dump one. You know, they're proven players, but the problem right now with their value is they're both coming off of surgeries, and they're both coming off of a series of health issues in the past. Bledsoe's had 3 knee surgeries. Brandon Knight hasn't finished the last 2 seasons because of an ankle surgery and then groin surgery this year. So, you know, there's going to be some questions about that. And Knight's been a guy that's already been traded twice in his career, and he's just 24. So the eyebrows go up a little bit when another team starts shopping him. I think out of the two, Bledsoe's a little bit more entrenched here. Bledsoe's the one that's been staying here the past 2 summers and really trying to, ingratiate himself more into the franchise, the community, his teammates and all that. He feels like he's got a lot still to prove. He was burning to make the playoffs, and Brandon Knight really hasn't been able to become part of the fabric here yet, partly because he came in the middle of last season and then had injuries this year too. So I think if one was more likely than the other, I would say Brandon Knight.
Paul Coro joins us from azcentral.com. Kyle Dodd, Jeff Munn, and for Brad Sesmatch on NBA Draft Day. Now, as soon as the draft is over, the next step, and it comes pretty quick, is that little courtship period in free agency, and then actual free agency itself. The names that are top the list, it's not realistic to think that the Suns would be top candidates for those players. And again, that's also an area we don't know what it's going to look like. But what are the Suns' thoughts going into that period of the offseason calendar?
Yeah, I think it's a realistic approach, but they're not going to quell their optimism about trying to aim big. They're still going to make the calls on the biggest guys. But they also know they're coming off of the type of season they had. They're not in the same situation they were the past couple of years when they could get in on Jason LaMarcus Aldridge like a year ago. There's part of the problem now is everybody has cap space. There's nothing special about the Suns having cap space, because that's an even playing field almost across the whole league. So the next scenario is, who's got a winning formula? Who's close? And the Suns aren't considered close right now. They're coming off their, worst season in franchise history since the inaugural year. So they're, they'll still be aggressive in free agency, but they're going to have to probably, in the public eye, overpay for some guys. But we'll all have to keep in mind that because the cap is so high, the numbers are going to be egregious. They're not going to make sense to anybody because it's on a totally different mathematical plane than in the past. And so we might see them filling some roles, some long-term needs, but maybe not the star players.
It'll be interesting. I'm saying it's going to be an interesting night, but really the interesting part's already started. And we know you're very busy. So, Paul, appreciate the time. Congratulations again on the award. And I know it's going to be a very long day, but a fun day. So we appreciate you spending some time with us today here on the Brad Sesmet Show.
You guys are awesome, Kyle. Appreciate your work. And Munster, you're one of my favorite people ever. So
thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Paul.
Good to talk to you. Paul Coro, azcentral.com. A quick thought before the break. I think the sad reality, and I don't know if the word's sad, but just a 30-second thought, the Suns, given where they are right now, they can't really go out and compete for free agents because he mentioned the cap space thing. But the other thing is most of these guys, and I don't know why fans get upset with players when they say, I want to go someplace where I can win.
Yeah, I think that if you're the Suns, you gotta use a healthy Eric Bledsoe and a Devin Booker who's on the rise big time to try to lure maybe not the top tier free agent, but that next tier. I think you got two pieces there that win healthy. Is a really, really good backcourt, but yeah, you're right. I mean, coming off the worst year in franchise history, you're not going to go get probably a LeBron or KD in this offseason.
Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports college basketball analyst, and yeah, he's got some thoughts too about the NBA draft. And again, we're watching things move. If there's any news to report, we'll certainly pass it along. But Clark Kellogg's up next. Big day, NBA draft day. Kyle Dodd, Jeff Munn with you on the Brad Sesmet Show. NBA draft day. Kyle Dodd to my right, your left, ASU radio basketball analyst and a guy who day-to-day knows about as much about basketball, especially in the Valley, as anybody. I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of ASU women's basketball. Used to be with the D-backs. I just kind of mill around town and take phone calls when I can get them. And it's the Brad Sesmet Show on a Thursday, NBA draft day. Our next guest is a guy who's got his finger on the pulse of things. While he is still celebrating the Cavaliers championship, and that's CBS college basketball analyst Clark Kellogg. Clark, I'm told that on Twitter you guaranteed a Game 7 victory in the finals. You're one of those guys. I know you're from Ohio. This has to be the moment you thought would never get here, but it finally did.
Yeah, and I'm actually from Cleveland, guys. Jeff and Kyle, really thrilled for LeBron, the team, the organization, the city. Long-time Cleveland fan, the Browns, Indians, everybody, and felt confident once Cleveland won Game 5 that they would have what it took to get Game 7 if they could force it. I thought they found the recipe for success: attack, play downhill, keep the turnovers low, play through LeBron and Kyrie Irving, be physical, and they did all of that stuff. And then obviously you've got to make big plays and big shots and single possession games, and they were able to do that in Game 7. But I had a real confident feeling that for Cleveland to break through as a city, for the Cavs to break through as an organization, it might be poetic justice for it to happen in the most improbable and historic of ways. And you think about LeBron and his career and coming back, it just seemed like it all would fit, and they played their part and got it done. So I'm going to be basking in that glow along with hundreds of thousands of other Cleveland fans and citizens for a long time.
Hey, do you know, has J.R. Smith put his shirt back on yet? I heard he's missing his shirt for the last couple.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I don't know about that. I actually taped. I didn't go up. I live in Columbus, Ohio, and didn't go up for the parade, just had some other stuff to do. But family, I know some family members were there, and I did record it, so I'll go back and kind of watch it in a very slow and deliberate fashion. But I did catch some highlights, and it was warm up there, so I think the guys needed to cool off a little bit when they disrobed up top.
Clark Kellogg, CBS College basketball analyst, joining Kyle Dodd and Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. All right, let's dive into this. The draft has been, at least the plot line has been kind of set in cement for a while. Everybody knows how 1 and 2 are going to go. After that, anybody's guess how it will fall. Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with what kind of deals come down between now and the time the picks have to be turned in. Your sense is, Clark, what is your sense about when the Suns get to 4, they could go a number of ways. What is your sense about where they're going to go? We hear a lot about Marquese Chriss now for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And what's your feeling on that?
Well, I tell you what. I mean, once you get outside, to me, the top three clear-cut players in terms of how they project to the NBA are Simmons, Ingram, and Dunn. I think Hield you could put in that group in the next tier. And I've got a couple other guys that I think have a chance to be really good pros based on me seeing them and watching them fairly close. Jaylen Brown and Malachi Richardson is guys I've been impressed with, the young man from Syracuse. Love Malik Beasley. Chris really impressed me, him and Murray both, coming out of Washington. Young guys, obviously, only playing 1 year in college, but tremendous upside. I made notes about those two guys after watching Washington play a couple of times as guys to keep an eye on for this coming season in college, and both elected to lead. So again, there's no exact science to this, as you guys well know, Jeff and Kyle. There's a lot of potential that's out there, and I really marvel at the job that presidents and GMs do in trying to whittle this thing down based on not a lot of surefire evidence, you know. So I can understand if you wanted to swing for the fences a bit and go with a guy like Chris, who has tremendous upside, and if you're confident in his character and his work ethic, then you could pull the trigger, because that's what it's going to take for a lot of these guys that have question marks but great potential. Who are they? What is their character and work ethic like? And if those things are in place, then they have a chance to maximize their ability. And Chris is one of those guys that looks like he could be 3-4 years from now, he could be a player that you build your team around or is a key part of a winning playoff caliber team.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, you're able to watch a lot of college basketball. You do a great job analyzing the game at the college level. Is there a guy, and this may be a tough question because obviously it's so unknown, is there a guy in this draft that you think could be a Draymond Green type, or a guy that could go late in the first round, that could be a guy that really sneaks up on people?
Yeah, you know what, Kyle, there are a number of guys that I would categorize as potential sleepers. And the one thing we always have to look at least for me, fit is so important to a player being able to realize his ability, playing to his strengths, being in a system and with other players where he's able to do what he's capable of doing. I don't know, and this is no knock on Draymond Green, I don't know if he's the same player in just with just about every other team.
Yeah.
I don't know if other teams would have put him in the 5 position. The game is changing so that more and more teams are playing smaller lineups, but would every team have recognized his ability to do what he does as a small 5 man? I don't know. But Golden State has capitalized and maximized on it. And so often for the guys that aren't surefire potential all-stars, there are a handful of guys each year, not even, maybe 3 or 4, that you look at every draft and say, I'd be shocked if this guy, barring injury, isn't a multi-time all-star. And there are a handful of those guys. I think Simmons would fit into that category. I think Ingram. I think Chris Dunn. Heald maybe to a lesser degree. But after that, the other guys, it's a little bit of wait and see. And that's the same for every draft. But in terms of a couple of guys that I've kind of put in my sleeper category, I love DeAndre Bembry. I love his versatility, his poise, his maturity. And that's from a distance. I didn't have a chance to see him up close, but I loved watching him play every time I watched him play. He's a guy that impresses me as somebody that can perhaps exceed wherever he's drafted. Caris LeVert, the kid out of Michigan, I know him fairly well from watching him a little bit in high school. He grew up in Columbus and matriculated to Michigan, but hasn't played a lot the last 2 years due to injury. But he's got a lot in his package if he's healthy that I think bodes well for being an outstanding player, maybe a late first-round pick, maybe might fall into the second, depending on how teams feel about his health. Those two guys are two, and I don't know where Malcolm Brogdon is going to land, but he just looks like a 12-year valuable pro. And when you talk to him and watch him work and hear about who he is as a young man and what his aspirations and goals are, he's got winning attributes all over him. And when you've got that kind of quality of character and you've got the size he has, the defensive versatility, the improved shooting, I mean, he just looks like a guy to me that 5 years from now we look at this draft, he's going to be one of the standouts in it.
Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports College basketball analyst, joining Kyle Dodd and Jeff Munn on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Let me just change gears slightly, because we've gone through the show today and we haven't mentioned the Derrick Rose to New York trade. The thing that surprised me about that deal, Clark, was not so much there is a huge risk involved for New York in acquiring a guy that has had a truckload of injury issues. But the other thing that just knocked my eyeballs out was what the Knicks gave up. The Bulls got a group of serviceable players. No stars, but they didn't get just garbage coming back either. I'd be interested in your thoughts. That's the part that surprised me the most about that deal. Was that what surprised you?
You know what? I haven't looked at it totally and thoroughly. But anytime you look at deals, you try to look at them from both sides, which is always hard. But you try to look at, could this actually benefit both teams in time? Because we tend to want to capitalize these immediately, and you have to let it play itself out. New coach in Chicago, what's transpiring? New coach in New York, what's transpiring there? What are you trying to build? I mean, all of those things don't become crystallized until we have the benefit of time. So that's how I kind of look at that. Clearly, Derrick Rose, it's a shame to see that he's not been able to launch from the MVP season that he had because of injuries. And now he's continuing to try to climb back to an elite level. And who knows if he ever gets back there, guys. But I think it's not a bad risk on New York's part. And, again, I think if Derrick is healthy, I think it could be a pretty good situation for both teams going forward.
Now, I know we mentioned you being a big Cleveland fan, and I know you spend most of the year, you know, with college basketball. Are you a big NBA guy? Do you watch a lot of NBA games
of the Cavs? I spent 32 years with the Pacers between playing and broadcasting. And my last 4 years up until 2014, I was working in player relations with the team. So I'm clearly a big NBA guy, and heck, I'm about to be 55, so more than 50% of my life was spent in the NBA in relationship with the Pacers. So clearly an NBA guy. It's a little different now that I'm not working for the team as I had been over the last 30 years or so up until 14. But I still keep an eye on it. I keep an eye on the NBA. Thrill for the Cavs. I mean, I was a youngster in Cleveland when that team came into existence. Back in 1970, played summer league basketball, went to my first overnight camp, hosted by Austin Carr, who continues to do TV and work for the team. Played with Jim Jones and Campy Russell and Bingo Smith and Terry Furlow and Mike Mitchell and others during the summer when those guys were playing for the Cavaliers. So, no, I have a strong allegiance to my hometown of Cleveland. Family still there. And a big NBA fan, huge NBA fan, even though my work is primarily on the college side.
I think we all are big NBA fans, and I think we're all looking forward to tonight. Clark, we really appreciate the time. It's great to talk to you. All the best. And, yeah, you got a birthday coming up, so happy birthday, and we'll talk to you very soon.
All right, very good, Jeff, Kyle. Take care. Enjoy your draft night and the rest of the weekend.
Absolutely. Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports college basketball analyst. Boy, that's great to get him on the show. When we come back, we're going to touch on a number of things, including, I promise this, we're going to solve, Kyle and I are going to solve the LA Angels problems all in like 3 minutes. Trust me, if you have Artie Moreno's number on your cell phone, call him, because we're going to solve all his problems for him. Well, we hope. Anyway, that's coming up next on the Brett Sesmatch Show on a Thursday. Gotta love that rejoiner music. Jeff Munn, Kyle Dodd on the Brad Sesmatch Show. That's Kyle, by the way. I'm Jeff, so we got all that straightened out. One more thought about basketball, and then we'll hit some other things. Given the plot line, and Game 7 is by itself was a terrific basketball game. If you really get into anything you like about basketball, the athleticism, the strategy, all of it was there in Game 7. And I came away from it feeling like, well, the NBA, it's not the NHL where they need something to raise their profile. But I thought Game 7 really left the NBA and the game of basketball in general in a really good place. You couldn't find anybody that would have any complaints about Game 7.
No, it's one of those situations where so many times games like that don't deliver, that it delivered and then some. And I think the NBA is really benefiting from not only a good Game 7, but a little rivalry between, you know, so many people were on the Steph as the best player in the league bandwagon, and I think we all saw firsthand, I mean, as good as Steph is, there's only one athlete like LeBron James probably ever to play any sport anywhere. I mean, the guy's an absolute beast, and I think people had been waiting for him to grab that moment, and that's the one thing people thought he didn't have was that killer instinct. And I'll tell you, when you're blocking a shot above the square with 2 minutes left to go in the NBA Finals to get your team the stop that it needed, that I think you have a little something inside you there, a little fire burning, and I think LeBron reclaimed that title of best player in the league, best player in the world in basically three games.
Yeah, I agree with you. There are a couple other little news items I want to get to, and we've been kidding Kyle because he's a huge, grew up in Orange County, huge LA Angels fan, and I don't want to just center this on the Angels, but they're an interesting story because they're essentially out of it. And we're about to turn the calendar to July, and that's going to start all the chatter in baseball toward the trade deadline. The D-backs are going to be in the middle of that, although I don't think they're at a point where they're ready to decide we're sellers, we're buyers. But the Angels, this is an unusual spot for them to be in because most of the time, under Mike Socia and owner Artie Moreno, they've been the opposite. They've been the go for it. We're gonna get players. But to me, their primary the number one guy that comes to mind is Houston Street. Not so much Pujols because he's having a very down year offensively, and that heavy contract. There's just no way you can unload him.
He's stuck.
But they are a team that, to me, I think it'll be interesting to see if Artie Moreno, in particular, just decides, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
We're going to start unloading people.
Yeah, I think they're in a spot that they haven't been. Let me just go back a minute because I think the real lesson here is anytime a guy from U of A owns your baseball team, bad things happen, apparently. Yeah. I had to get that in. No. But, Artie's obviously done a great job there and been great for baseball in Southern California. But they are in a weird spot. I mean, you have the best player in the game, in my opinion, in Mike Trout. You have an aging Pujols. You're still paying Josh Hamilton. You just got done paying Vernon Wells. You're paying, this had some bad contracts over the last couple of years. Your farm system's depleted. Do you make a move to get some prospects back in your farm system to help out a team like Chicago, who's, we mentioned off the air that needs some closer help in Houston Street or one of the other contenders? But it's going to be an interesting July and August for the Angels. They're in a different spot than they've been in for the last couple of years, and I don't really like it, but oh well, maybe we could get something out of it. So,
you mentioned Arizona. I hate to go into this, a couple of Sun Devils here, but two things. They did beat UCSB yesterday in Omaha. They get Oklahoma State again tomorrow. But Keith Law of ESPN, who seems to be just cranky about everybody.
Yeah.
He's had problems with the D-backs going back to the Kevin Towers era. He's really banging on the U of A right now because he's ripping them about all the innings that are piling up, particularly with Bobby Dalbec. That's not a good thing for a coaching staff. I mean, for Jay Johnson, you don't want that kind of reputation getting out there.
Yeah, I saw a tweet this morning where he said, you know, well, his defense was everybody's doing it. Well, that doesn't make it right, you know. And it is a concern of mine, even, you know, being raising kids at the youth level and coaching some youth teams. And you watch some of these guys, even as young as 8 and 9 years old, that kids are throwing 10, 12 innings in a weekend and manipulating rules and pitch counts. And, I mean, that's great. But, you know, at what point do you really take a look and say, what's best for this human being that's standing in front of me? And for coaches that preach loyalty and really caring about the kids, you know, are you just trying to get it done, or are you really care about your kids? And I'm not saying that Coach Johnson is doing that by any means, but there is, you know, something you got to take a look at, because, you know, obviously you don't want to jeopardize a kid's future. If he's that good of a pitcher, he's going to be playing a lot of baseball, you know, in the future. So how can you, you know, use him in the right way and not completely blow out his arm before he has, you know, no future at all?
Lastly, as far as things we just wanted to touch on, and this is a subject I've written about and talked about a lot in relation to this show and sports360az.com, the NHL finally made it official yesterday. They're going to put an expansion team in Las Vegas, first major pro sports league to go there. And a lot of the perception up there now is this is going to open the floodgates, that the Raiders are coming very soon. The NBA is going to watch this. Major League Baseball is going to watch this. We come in contact with Vegas a lot. ASU plays UNLV semi-regularly. You've played games up in Vegas. You've broadcast games in Vegas. The Pac-12 tournament is there. I think what's really going to be interesting to see, and Gary Bettman was asked about this yesterday. Somebody asked him, how do you deal with the gambling? And he just said, we're going to make it awfully difficult for people to bet on the game at the game. You can't completely control it. We're going to make it difficult. And I think there's going to be a whole lot of people who are going to put this thing under a microscope to see how the NHL deals with just that aspect of it going to Las Vegas.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the NHL is the first league to go to Vegas, because, you know, in the past, Gary Bettman's been one of the guys that's spoken out against gambling so much and sports, you know, gambling. But, you know, I think Vegas is a good sports town. You know, you mentioned I've been there as a player at UNLV, and then watching, you know, at the Pac-12 tournament. They love sports out there, and I think they've been dying for this. So I think it's the excitement and the buzz of Vegas in general is at a different level, as we all know. So I think that you're right. I think the rest of these leagues are going to follow probably what the NHL is doing.
Let me ask you this question. I don't know if this is a fair thing to ask, but I'll take it anyway with the time we have left. You've been up there for the Pac-12 tournament. College basketball is on the boards in Vegas. But when you're in the MGM Garden Arena, you don't come in contact, do you, with – you don't hear a lot of chatter of, well, I had this team minus 15, and they're going to – you know, I'm losing the bet. You just don't get that much – that kind of atmosphere in the arena, do you?
No, not really at all. I think, you know, there's been a couple moments where late night games on the first day of the Pac-12 tournament where the crowd is sparse and people are cheering a late layup that doesn't matter, you know, and it's a handful of degenerate gamblers that are doing that. But for the most part, it's non-existent. You don't really think about it. You don't really hear about it. You don't really talk about it. It's just really more of an energy in the building for what's on the floor and what's, you know, the sport itself. I don't think you know, gambling's going on everywhere, so I don't think just because it's in Vegas, it's a big deal.
And I think Gary Bettman's comment, he just said, we just want the game experience in the arena in Vegas to be like every other team in the league, and I think that's a fair comment. Boy, this thing tonight's going to be a lot of fun.
Can't wait. It's going to be a bunch of rumors and a bunch of things that actually go down, and we'll see what happens. I'm excited for the Suns. I think it'll be a good draft for them.
So, that's it. We'll see what happens tonight. That's Kyle Dodd. I'm Jeff Munn. You're watching the Brett Setzmap Show and listening to it as well on sports360az.com and azcentral.com.